Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning entertainment podcast. And on this week's show, Will Smith apologizes, maybe. Batfleck may answer the signal. And what's up with all the bodies, bodies, bodies? And our From the Outside In topic this week, we discuss the franchise effect. Just how powerful are franchise properties to their studios? That is, as long as they don't start with a D and end in a C. Let's go ahead and get on with the show. My name is Troy Heinrichs, and that's right, bitches, I'm promoted to number one. What? Because Aaron decided to go to Florida for some reason. I have no idea why. With me, though, are my fellow hoes. Joining us all the way from the East Coast, Mr. Arjan. How are you, sir?
Hi, everybody. It's John. I'm doing just fine, buddy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic, especially when John does Muppet voices. It gives us a great start to the show.
His voice, his throat hurts now from all of that.
I can do it whenever I want, okay?
See, all you have to do is, like, neg him. Like, tell him, no, you can't do it, and then he'll do it.
I am not a bitch, and you are Aaron, okay?
That laughter you hear in the background is not Elmo. It is actually 2 weeks in a row. Miss Amanda Singh, how are you, Amanda?
Hello, hello. Yeah, let's mark this down for Nate Bruce. This is 2 out of 4. I am halfway to my record of being on time. Actually, I would say early. I was still early.
No, you were on time.
2 weeks in a row. I was early.
Nope.
We've talked about this. On time is early. Early is on time. On time is late.
Right. But when is early early? When do you get to be early?
When you show up before the squadcast actually opens.
No, when you're a full...
I can't because you didn't send the link. When it's I have to wait for you.
10 to 15 minutes. And yes, there was a link in the chat. There was a link
there. But I'm saying I couldn't do it before he sent it. Like, I can't do it before it's open because he's the one who sent it when he logged on.
What? What are the words?
It doesn't matter.
We're all here now.
No, this is weird shit. I want to understand what the hell she's trying to say. He needed to send the link, which he copied and pasted into the chat, but he needed to send it in an email because otherwise it doesn't count?
No. I was saying because, oh my God, I don't even know why we're talking about this.
Exactly.
We're going to move on.
Okay.
Because
we'll let your mind ponder it the entire show.
Well, it's going to bother me a lot.
While these guys are being bothered by things that don't matter to anybody, the rest of us were all bothered because we had to say goodbye to some 4 unfortunate souls that passed away over the weekend.
Oh, my God.
Emmy-winning actress Pat Carroll and voice of Ursula the Sea Witch from Little Mermaid passed away at 95. And the woman who broke ground in many ways on television, Nichelle Nichols, who played Ensign Uhura on Star Trek, the original series, in the first 6 movies, died at the age of 89 this weekend. So powerhouses in the female acting categories. Did any of these two ladies make an impact on your lives, Amanda?
I mean, who didn't love Ursula? But I think for all of us, for society, we need to really appreciate Nichelle. I mean, she created, I think it was the first, she was the first woman to have an on-screen interracial kiss. And that is huge to bring that to the forefront of television and cinema, that that's acceptable and that's okay and it's great and all the interracial love that we can take. And so I really love that. And also her NASA contributions. I mean, I think we really need to appreciate her for everything she did.
Man, when did Star Trek get so political? Oh, right. From the beginning.
I think that was the entire concept from Gene from the start, is to make life better for everybody.
And if, for those who don't know, I'm riffing on a line that Sir William Shatner asked the question of, when did Star Trek get so political? And you know, we point to you in every single episode of the original Star Trek series. You were right there from the beginning.
Not to mention that Shatner in that interracial kiss was the one that was so adamant that he had to be the one to kiss Nichelle because he wanted the spotlight for that particular moment.
I wonder if, like, that toupee is just stuck to his head by sheer force of will at this point.
Either that or a warp core explosion or something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, that just got too nerdy for me. Let's move on.
What about you? What was the big thing you took away from these two ladies?
Of course, Pat Carroll was amazing in what everything she did. And Nichelle Nichols, I think she, I like very many people in the 80s when I was watching Star Trek for my very first time, eating my giant pizza as a 9 year old sitting on my lap Friday nights, like Nichelle showing up on the screen was one of my favorite things in the whole world. So, yeah, I mean, like the whole fact that then she later on comes into the movies and the feather dance that she does in one of the movies. Oh, come on.
No, and I always appreciated her from the standpoint of just, she was like strong and powerful and black and able to just command the screen very well and go toe to toe with some of like Captain Kirk and talking back to him occasionally. I think it was a nice tug between those two in their relationship throughout the course of the show and throughout the movies. It's just really great to have powerhouse people and then contribute not only to, you know, the lore of a particular franchise, you know, spoiler alert for later, but at the same time, just be so iconic in shaping how TV and film moved through the 70s, 80s, and 90s into what we see on the screen today. Super, super great to have both of them.
Love to the ladies.
Why don't we have a conversation then, Amanda, because more ladies that we have that are dropping like flies, but not in a dead situation. Tell us about what happened with Tomb Raider franchise recently.
Oh, yeah. So they had a release date and sequel plans, but now Tomb Raider, which was fantastic, is getting a redo once again as MGM no longer has the rights. So Alicia Vikander is no longer in that role. They're talking about trying to recast it. What do you guys think is the best course of action for fans here?
Kill it with fire.
Kill it with fire.
Yeah, you know, like we just had the Alicia Vikander movie. It was, for all intents and purposes, a very watchable, pretty good movie. And I don't see a point in trying to bring any more life into something right now. Put it away for 10 years. Don't sit here and rehash it again. There's other female-led games that you can make a story out of. Go with one of those.
Like Horizon Zero Dawn.
Horizon Zero Dawn, you know, let's put away this whole, has to be Tomb Raider and it has to be this. And let's put that away and just focus on creating something new until we find something that actually catches on and makes for good storytelling.
Look, all three video games that were released by Square Enix were very decent. And I think you could take any of those stories and convert them into a movie, much like we did with Uncharted recently. And I think you back up the Brinks truck and put Alicia Vikander right back in the role, because I thought she was amazing in how she portrayed Laura. And I loved the story and the history behind it. And it just fit the game so well that I don't think you shelve this too long. I think I'm with Arjun where maybe not this year, next year kind of thing. But like by 2025, there better be like a 3-movie plan and then bring Alicia back, because I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, I really want her back in the role. I have no idea why they're looking to recast her other than just trying to make their own mark. I would much rather they just say, hey, this is successful. This has worked really well. Why don't we just pick it up and make money off of it as is? I don't understand why we have to just completely scrap and demolish all of these wonderful projects. Maybe not all wonderful, but at least this one's wonderful. With these really like perfectly cast female leads in a franchise, since we're talking franchise, that has been a way for women to connect with like an Indiana Jones, if you will.
Especially,
I really want this.
Especially because you know, MGM no longer having the rights, Amazon loses out on that deal. So Amazon no longer has the ability to make TV shows for Prime or movies for Prime because MGM doesn't have the rights anymore. I think that's huge news too. So anybody could pick this up, right? Disney could pick it up. Sony could pick it up. Warner could pick it up. Oh, wait, Warner can't pick it up because Warner doesn't want to do anything correctly.
Unless they do $90 million.
But I think
we'll talk about all that later.
I think that's the interesting thing is like which movie studio wants to pick up the rights to this? It'll be something to keep an eye on. I mean, even A24 could come in and pick up the rights to this and do something interesting.
Oh my God, that'd be crazy.
It's not hoity-toity enough for A24.
It could be, though. That's what I'm saying. You could make
Does it have to be?
She could come across some witch stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like anything supernatural. But it wouldn't be honoring the original content if they went that far askew.
I mean, do they have right. to honor the content? They could make their own content.
Yes, absolutely. It has to honor the content.
See, this is a very complicated question because a lot of people will say, well, especially for video game adaptations, it's not, you can't just transpose it to the screen most times. It's really difficult to, you know, it's not the same as a book adaptation. Video games are more complicated. And so a lot of times they have to add different things or change things to make it work. But that's not one of those things that's like completely diverting the path, you know, like it never had any supernatural or, you know, witchy intentions. But at the same time, Tomb Raider has been done traditionally multiple times already. So if we're doing a new iteration, don't we want something fresh and unique?
Right. But it comes down to when you start really changing the story that much, why does it have to be Tomb Raider anymore? Give her a different name. Make it its own movie. With the exception of name recognition, you don't have a really good reason or excuse to continue to say, hey, this is going to be Tomb Raider when we're going to add wizards in with light swords in it. And it's going to be in space, but it's going to be Tomb Raider. No, it's not. It's officially Star Wars at that point.
But you could do mystical, witchy type of material, like any kind of like going into the Amazon, deep into the Amazon, or Egyptian stuff or what have you. There's all kinds of like spiritualness that you could tap into that could be in the vein of the original, but yet give us a new story potentially.
I don't like it.
Anything would be better than Indy 5. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Well,
you're damn right on that.
Well, why don't, that's a low blow. That's a low blow, and Aaron's not here to take it.
That's why we said it out loud, because he can't edit it or delete it out.
Okay.
He can after the fact, and he just might. We know him. The other thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is, if you remember Troy Kotsur, not this one on the podcast, from Coda, the Oscar-winning film, he is set to lead a Disney Plus series about a deaf high school football team. It's going to focus on the 2021 season for the football team, when they had an undefeated season and even played in the California State Championship game, the first in the history for the school. The captains for the team got to appear and toss the coin on the field for Super Bowl earlier this year. And it's going to not only follow the historical undefeated football season, but also tell the stories of the deaf community. So the students, teachers, and families, both on and off the field. And the cast and crew will be made up of people from the deaf community. Obviously, this is a huge, huge turn for entertainment, focusing on people with disabilities and making sure that the people who are involved in the project are those who have that disability, however other way you would word it. My question for you guys, because we all can agree this is pretty awesome, is what other type of story that we haven't seen before would you like to see? Is there anything that comes to mind for you in this vein?
From like a disability perspective or...
Yeah, I mean, mental health, mental illness, different things like that, or maybe it's a physical or some other ailment that maybe doesn't get enough notoriety and publicity that we should have some awareness for that we just don't see in that scope.
Off the cuff. I mean, I feel like we've tapped into a lot of mental illness type stuff recently. I mean, I'm thinking about Everything Everywhere All at Once is kind of like a mental illness spin to it. Especially with the daughter and what she's dealing with throughout the course of that movie. You know, for me, I don't think it's really more about the disability side of things. I think it's the way we talk about disabilities. So yes, I want to see more people with these conditions and medical situations represented more in film. Yes. But I think the harder thing to do is actually have the proper conversations about it. Like, we talk about ADHD and autism and neurodivergency a lot in my household.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people don't understand that those are situations that are just as difficult to work with on a regular basis, that we need to have more films describe what it's like to live being neurodivergent, and then the conversations you have to have about neurodivergency. I think that would be one that would be helpful, because a lot of people just like, oh, they're just rambunctious and they just, you know, need to get their energy out and run around, and you know, you don't understand, you know, how to just do tasks and things of that nature. So I think shedding more light on neurodivergency and the different types of neurodivergency that are out there would be super helpful.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I really adore the Netflix show Atypical, because it centers around a family who has a son who is autistic, and his life, and it deals with a lot of like the whole family's development throughout his developing with autism, and how he's gone from somebody who was a very withdrawn child to being more of a teenager, where he's not nearly was withdrawn. The autism is still very much there, but he's very high functioning. And one of the reasons why I like it so much is because it reminds me of my nephew and how I've watched him grow up over these years. He's 11 years old, and you can actually he's actually capable of engaging in a conversation. At one point, he wouldn't even make eye contact, and he wouldn't even use words for a lot of time. But if you threw, you know, puzzles or something to build in front of him, it would be amazing to see the kind of things he would come up with right away. So I really love that. But one of the things I kept thinking about, because I never heard about this story about a deaf football team. It's like, and they won
the whole thing.
Undefeated. 11-0.
You know, maybe there's something to this Echo show where like a whole squad of deaf men can sit there and destroy a football season, you know, when you got the superhero who's deaf, and she's gonna kick a whole lot of ass too. So that's actually very cool.
You know, one of the things that I think about for this series is it's really going to showcase for us who don't have a hearing impairment that these individuals are relying so much more on all of their other senses. And I feel like they're better communicators. And that's something that we found in CODA, is that there are so many different ways to communicate that those of us who have all of our senses, we kind of take them for granted and we don't think about it. One area that I think would be really interesting for us to look into in terms of creating content around would also be something for like TBI, brain injuries, and the effects of that, and, you know, a story to bring awareness to it, because it's so impactful to our nation, especially with a country that's so focused on football and loves it. I think we would, you know, it would be nice to have something that really educates and teaches people in a cinematic way about different diseases and disabilities.
You can play football on a football field with a football. Sorry, it's an old Bob Nelson gig. If you don't know who the comedian Bob Nelson is, then I'm sorry for you. Bruce Koskiaski, University of San Francisco, tight end. Next year, I hope to be a wide receiver.
You heard it right here. John hopes to be a wide receiver.
All right. So my story is up next. So imagine this. Imagine you're your Warner Brothers, let's just say, just to grab a name of a production company or a movie company off the top of my head. You sit there and you have people on your lot, and they're going through and they're taking that whole lot, you know, Hollywood lot tour. And they're like, you know, somebody says, okay, well, look over here. You've got, they're actually filming the Aquaman sequel right in that building. Oh, crap. Is that Jason Momoa out front? And who is he? Ben Affleck in the bat suit. Are you kidding me? All of a sudden, Warner Brothers has to say and let everyone know, by the way, we need to tell you all that Ben Affleck is going to return as the Batman in Aquaman 2. And Jason Momoa had to bring this out. I'm really excited that they're, you know, well, actually, we'll get to the story later as to what tempered my excitement, but this had me really excited because it's showing some signs that there might be a little bit of life into the remnants of the Snyderverse. What do you guys are thinking?
I was excited for this when it happened, and then I was also told that Michael Keaton was going to get back in the Batsuit, and I'm hearing that that might not be the case anymore, so grain of salt for this. It'd be cool if it happened. I always thought he was a good Batman. definitely a much better Bruce Wayne than
Christian Bale.
Not Christian Bale.
He's a better Bruce Wayne than Christian Bale.
Oh, you're talking about Robert Pattinson.
And yeah. a better Bruce Wayne than Robert Pattinson. Yeah.
So you got to have both sides. You have to have a good Batman and a good Bruce Wayne. And Robert and
he doesn't do it as well.
So,
you know, that's the other Bruce Wayne was doing way too much. Listen to The Cure way too much.
I just thought it was funny how this all went down. Just like, hey, that guy's not supposed to be here. What?
Yeah, what? We have to announce it way ahead of time. We can't just surprise people. This is bullshit.
See, I'm not getting my hopes up for Ben to be here and for this movie to premiere, especially because we have the controversy of other people attached to it. She Who Must Not Be Named, and Warner Brothers in general, I'm feeling a lot of distrust with them. You know, we're not on the same page anymore. And I definitely don't think that there's going to be, I mean, we know there's not going to be more of the Snyderverse. I also feel like WB is going to try to limit as much Zack Snyder influence as they can, except where they know that they can profit extensively. But they seem to clash with wanting Snyder to have his vision realized. And we've seen the interviews that have come out recently.
Yeah, let's just get some of this out of the way, because we were planning on talking about this at the end of the show, but let's just go ahead and go to it now, because it just makes sense, and this is where it probably fits. We just got news that, incredibly, Warner Brothers is shelving the $70 million Batgirl film that, you know, was going to be another, not only a great film for a POC, a female POC to take the lead on, but also a great film in which we see the return of Brendan Fraser in a possible franchise and on a screen and open to everybody. So, you know, these sorts of things that Warner Brothers is doing at the behest of Discovery makes me really nervous for the DC world. What do you think, Troy?
Well, I'm going to tell you, first of all, that it's not at the behest of Discovery, and it's not Warner Brothers doing it, because the deal was closed. So I don't get canceled, or we get canceled. We're going to make sure that everybody knows that it's called Warner Brothers Discovery, and it's the WBD going forward, because that is the name of the new company, which I think is just going to change itself to WMD with the way that it's axing everything that it's specifically going through. For me, I'm more disappointed that Michael Keaton doesn't get to go back into the Batsuit, because he was obviously tapped for this to be here. I know R. John has a secret love crush, you know, wants Brendan Fraser's babies and everything, but it's just the way it is.
Hey, man, he was my hair god growing up.
For me, like, granted, you have the POC angle in the story. That's going to be something that's going to get run with a lot. It's upwards of $90 million now with the reshoots and the rewriting that they were going to have to do towards the end of this. So, I mean, it's a lot of cash to just say it's in post-production. It's like almost done. And then they screened it for some people and they were like, dude, this is hot garbage. And rather than putting something out there that would get subscribers just to subscribe, even if it's bad for HBO Max, just to get rid of it completely, that just tells you like either how bad it really was, or they really don't want to tarnish the Batgirl name because they have other plans. They're just not ready to release the plans yet.
Well, it's a lot of it is about the dollar mark. They've created now a strategic plan that essentially that they're trying to follow. And with that comes that you have to have, like, they're not going to put out films that are under that $90 million. And this was a $70 million budget, so it didn't make the cut, essentially. They're trying to be more intentional about what they release and where they release it. And I think there's even something about, you know, making sure that they're intentional about what they release in theaters versus online, through online versus streaming. And so it just brings up a lot for them where it's, we're not going to do this anymore, cut it, scrap it. But to me, that's just, it's more than callous to just have an entire project completed and just wipe it away and not let anyone see it. I don't know. I feel like maybe this could just be their way of covering that it was a really bad film. But I don't know. It just feels like a very messy move for them to state that they're going to scrap anything under 90 mil.
Well, along with this, you got the Scooby-Doo sequel that's being scrapped or scrappied. but, you know,
that was cute.
I couldn't help myself. I tried not to, but then my body said, just do it. Anyhow, the thing that I think about that when I flashback on when movies have done this. So, you know, take the Justice League movie, for example, where Warner Brothers stepped in and they said, hey, we're not happy with the direction this movie is going in. Let's throw in another director. And all of a sudden we have all this controversy surrounding the movie. First, the movie comes out. It's not terrible. It's also not very great. And then there's more controversy that starts coming out about what happened behind the scenes when Joss Whedon took over. And then there's more you have the whole release the Snyderverse thing. You have with the original Suicide Squad, you have like the air cut versus the theatrical cut, how they're two different movies, where again a movie theater came in and chose to adjust the story for to be more more palatable or B, lighter and funnier, or whatever the reason was for them to step in and try to change the story that was being told by the director. So there's a long history of Warner Brothers coming in and doing this sort of thing, and it not coming out very good in the end. So I kind of respect the idea of, like, instead of saying, okay, well, we're going to have a different director or a different story come in, or, you know, a different redo this and do more reshoots, let's just scrap the whole thing entirely because we already have a bad track record of doing that. I respect it if that's part of the thinking.
At the same point, though, I mean, we got The Room, we got Geely, we got Showgirls. There have been much more hot garbage that's been put out for people to see. That how bad could this have been to say, I'm just going to light 70 mil on fire?
Well, it's only 70 million.
Especially when you have a streaming service, it's like, put it on the streaming service. Yeah, not going to be seen by everybody if you put it on the streaming service, but at least it's a content that you don't have otherwise.
Well, that goes back to the whole thing where Warner Brothers, HBO Max doesn't want to be seen as another thing like Netflix, where they just like, okay, well, it's not the great movie. Let's just throw it on Netflix and see what happens. Or let's throw it on Amazon Prime for super cheap. Let's see what happens. Like they're trying to make HBO Max, and you can tell by the kind of quality of things that they have on there, because you have to really look for something that fails on that HBO Max that that they're trying to put out a different kind of quality than everybody else.
Why not sell it to Netflix or Amazon Prime then?
You know, I wasn't in The Room, Troy.
I'm just throwing out plausible. I mean, $70 million, you know, but this is the thing, you know, you have the new company, right? Warner Brothers Discovery is now the new company. And anytime you have acquisitions or mergers or things of this nature, me going through eight of them in the last almost 2 years at my company, you know, there are things you're trying to do by saying, I'm taking on this new company. Here are the synergies we're going to see. And here's all the cost-cutting measures you're going to have. This is the new company coming in and saying, like, here's where we're cutting the costs to make us more profitable as a global dominating thing in the future. And that's what we're seeing right now, is the cost-cutting measures before we see the actual fruition of the synergies, which may take a year or two before they actually come to fruition.
Which this isn't the first thing we've seen them do. We've seen them cut every single scripted show down to like maybe two on the different channels they have. We've seen them go through CW and cut a vast majority of the scripted shows that they had on there. And so, like, this isn't anything new specifically for this company. And, you know, hopefully once the dust settles, we'll start seeing something different come out of it.
Which The Flash did get its announcement that it's the final season, and it got its number of episodes released just recently.
Yeah. It's going to be weird. Like, I haven't paid attention to the Arrowverse in 4 years, 5 years, but it's still going to be weird to know that the Arrowverse is not there.
Everything ends eventually.
It's about time.
That is, unless you go into the multiverse, because Everything Everywhere All at Once is going to go on forever, because it's been an amazing run for them, as Michelle Yeoh has become the company's first film to cross 100 million globally at the box office. So A24 is taking names with this movie, and I think it's really fantastic to see that it's doing so well, because I think that it has some really great, like we're talking about, mental illness stories. It's got really great family story on how to overcome adversity. It really goes into conceptual of spirituality as far as like the multiverse goes. Like, can you have multiple different lives and multiple different personalities and things of that nature? If you haven't seen it, go check it out. Super, super great. But it's their first film to cross 100 million global at the box office. So that's great.
I'm so damn happy that it was this movie too, because it is one that Aaron and I did not realize or think would have as much attention to it as it has, you know, for good reason, because it's incredible and you should absolutely see it, like Troy said. But I just did not anticipate this level of success for it. And this is the type of movie, especially when you have a leading Asian woman who crosses over that mark for an entire company. Like, that is huge. And she was amazing. I love this.
So then switching from a positive story to kind of a, Will Smith, he put out a video that apparently was to apologize for his actions and behavior at the Oscars with the slap heard and seen around the world. He answered pretty much the three big questions that we all were asking ourselves coming out of that evening. Like, why didn't you apologize to Chris Rock in your speech at the end? Why didn't you, have you reached out to Chris Rock? You know, did Jada say something to you specifically that caused you to snap? All of these questions. To me, when I watched this, it felt very PR, very scripted, not a lot of empathy. I think he even laughs at one point during the video when he's talking about Jada. Like, he's just like, come on, man, come on. You know, it's like there wasn't any like remorseful feeling in this. I think maybe it's too late from where the Oscars aired to now. And that's why you don't have as much emotional attachment to it. I don't know. What do you guys think when you saw it?
I don't want to sit here and play Monday morning quarterback for whatever it is that Will Smith is doing. A lot of apologies, you know, always sound rehearsed because someone's got to sit there and think about every single aspect of every single thing they've done wrong. And for them to not only go and apologize, but then to apologize to the world for everything he's done and the way he's done it is I think he deserves more credit than he's getting. You know, it's easy to sit here and sit back and go, he's only doing this for insert negative reason here. But I don't know. I want to exercise my right to see the positive in things and assume the positive in what a lot of people are doing, especially when it comes to, you know, someone who obviously made a mistake, obviously is trying to pay for it in every single way he can. And I don't know. I want to give him some room. What do you? What about you, Amanda?
I feel a little less forgiving. It is what it is. It was a really shitty moment. It's not something that, you know, I don't know about his entire reputation being tarnished forever. But I definitely feel like he should have some long term consequences for essentially hitting a coworker at like a work event. But the thing that really stood out to me is that it felt more, I didn't feel it was as much of a PR stunt. I do, obviously, there is some to it because he's lost a ton of projects. And I'm sure there is a level of realization and his accountability, because when all of those things start to happen, you're like, is this a me problem or is this just, you know, the culture being too woke? But the one thing that I really noticed in this video, aside from his demeanor, which Troy was pointing out, like his mannerisms, you know, he kind of has like a smirk to it when he's talking. I don't feel like it is as authentic as it should be. But the thing that stood out to me, and I feel like I've said that 14 times, but it almost seems like it's more of a don't pick on Jada. Like, this was my choice. I made this choice. She didn't make me do anything. And I still feel like he isn't taking full accountability, because in one of the places in the video, he says, I made this choice based on from my own experiences, from my history with Chris. in that statement, you're still putting some of the responsibility on somebody else. You're not taking full accountability and full responsibility. You're saying, well, because they've done this and that in the past, and we've had this and that happen in the past, that's why I did what I did, is essentially how that's coming across. And it just feels very disingenuous, and it feels like it is more so about trying to resolve Jada's reputation, because she really got slammed equally, if not more, than Will Smith from the scenario.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's the oh, they made me do it. And it's like, nobody makes you do anything. You choose to react, and how you react is what people see. And when you're an icon, a movie star that people look up to, you have to take responsibility with that in everything you do. And he didn't do that, and he lost control. And that's exactly what happened. And then to sit there and say about, like, you know, my trauma is having, you know, people not like me or whatever he said at the end of the video. It's like, I understand that's a trauma for you or whatever, but it's like, it's not, there's like real trauma out there. And I'm not like saying that he's not right for saying that he has a trauma, but at the same time, that stuff you got to work on yourself. And we don't need to know all your inner beings and inner doings or whatever, because we're not in your inner circle. We're not your friends. We're people that watch your movies. You know, you got to go to your inner friends. You got to go to Chris Rock and sit down and say, hey, these are the things that I'm struggling with. These are the things that I'm also seeing a therapist for to get better at. Here are the things I'm taking, medications for if I need to, in order to balance out. Those are the people you need to be talking to, not the entire world.
Here's the thing. Here's the deciding factor for me on why I feel like this is a lot of bullshit. If it was really just about recognizing his actions and apologizing to those it impacted, he'd be apologizing to Chris Rock. He'd be apologizing to Chris Rock's family. He'd be apologizing to the Academy. He would not need to make a public statement in a whole 5-minute video to make an apology 3 months after the fact.
Yeah.
You do that because you want the world to know that you've apologized and that you have sorrow and regret for what you did. But that, to me, is, and just to your point, Trey, to sit there and talk about how you have these traumas, the way he approached it felt and came across like as it's an excuse for his behavior.
Correct.
Like, I have these things going on, so that's why I did that. Well, look, man, we've all got a lot of shit going on, and you don't just react violently and then hope that, oh, well, because you've had some sad stuff happen, it's okay for you to behave that way. No, man. And I don't feel like you really got to that point. Like, you know, I have a lot of shit I'm trying to work on for myself, and this is what I'm doing to address it, and this is why I'm never going to make sure that never happens again. I didn't feel like that was the purpose of his video. It was just, Chris Rock doesn't want to talk to me, so I'm going to tell the world that I did apologize. Hey guys, I tried to talk to him. I tried.
Yeah, it's about him, not about the apology.
Yeah.
Well, or the flip side of this is that he's tried to apologize to people, and he's tried to reach out to people. And after a while of trying and hoping that somebody will sit down and talk to him, he said he had a great relationship with Tony, I think, his Chris Rock's brother. And yet now that relationship has been harmed. Like, he has probably gotten to a point where he is being driven to do something to at least get it out there, so he doesn't have to carry around this apology that he wants to do all the time. And I'm not saying that it was the right or wrong move. I'm just speculating on where he is mentally with this apology and what he's trying to do as somebody who is desperate to show the people who matter how he really feels. Whether or not it came across to us that way is, I think, immaterial to the fact that he was driven to make this step. It might have been a misstep. It might have been a good step. I don't know. Time will tell eventually, but it is, like, again, I don't want to sit there and assume the negative in his intent, because that's just not who I want to be as a person.
Well, now that John has slighted us because we see it negatively, the last thing that I will add to this is I also feel like putting it out there that Chris Rock hasn't responded to you, and, you know, putting all of this stuff out there into the ether is still a slam at him. Like, if he doesn't want to talk about it, he wants this to probably not be in the surface of everybody's face and talked about constantly. You know, maybe this is now a trauma for him and how he feels. And it really comes across like Will Smith is doing this for himself and not for the person who he harmed. And
oh yeah, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing it ultimately to relieve his conscience. Clearly. And that's
I think
not
I said something along those lines.
Yeah, but that's not a good enough reason to do this. You have to be doing what you're doing for the other person's benefit. And this is not a benefit to Chris Rock.
Right. You could just say like, hey, I reached out to Chris. I gave him the same apology that I'm telling all of you. You don't have to say Chris didn't respond. That's the part that makes it kind of shitty. You know, and in most times in therapy, when you have these situations, it's like, why are you apologizing? You write down the story on a piece of paper ahead of time. You don't have to publicize it to the world. You're apologizing for yourself to make yourself feel better, right. Whole, fixed, whatever. You can write it on a piece of paper, throw it in the fire, let it go. Right. When Chris wants to reach out, Chris is going to reach out, but you can't make Chris reach out if he doesn't want to. And I think that's just doing this as a public staged event. And, you know, it's been a while, you know, not really any kind of like true YouTube marketing behind it. It just kind of
throw
it up there. It's like,
I know. As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, the late Justin McCumber. I've been thinking about him a lot lately with our 500th episode coming up soon.
Yeah.
Well, also, you live in Texas now.
I do. You know what? It makes me really sad. I was just thinking about Krista, his wife. And just for those who don't know, Justin was a founding member of the Hollywood Outsider, and he passed away a few years ago from cancer. And it's just a failed transplant. It was just really sad. And I was thinking about how now I'm literally in his neck of the woods. Like, I am probably no more than 20 to 30 minutes away from where he lived. And I don't get to see him. And it's made me really sad. And that's why I've thought about it a lot lately, is because I'm in his area.
Oh, come on. You know, if Justin was still there, he'd be beating down your door just to, you know, I'm not going to finish that sentence.
I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going with this. Just to give context, Justin was a hilarious, hilarious guy, but he also had his pervy moments. And I remember one time I visited Texas and I put a picture on Facebook, and and there was a little bit of cleavage, and he was like, everything really is bigger in Texas. And it was hilarious, but also, yes, he was a little pervy, but
right.
I loved him, and his wife is amazing. And I actually reached out to her because I hope that they're doing well. Oh. She's doing well. Her family, his brother.
Well, if you have any thoughts on Will Smith's apology or any of these other stories, you can always reach out to us over on the website at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group, or you can find us on Twitter at @buypopcorn. With that, we're going to go into what might be the surprise hit of the summer as Aaron shares with us his review of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Bodies, bodies, bodies. So many bodies. When a group of rich 20-somethings plan a hurricane party at a remote family mansion, a party game turns deadly in this fresh and funny look at backstabbing, fake friends, and one party gone very, very wrong. The cast is amazing in this. Please tell me all about Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. For anyone who hasn't read the review on thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Yeah, it's got Amanda Stenberg, who The Hate U Give, loved her in that. And obviously, Hunger
Tremendous.
Games. But Maria Bakalova from The Borat, the sequel. Pete Davidson is in this movie. He actually is funny. I will admit that Pete Davidson actually plays something other than just Pete Davidson, even though the character's kind of a little bit like Pete Davidson.
But that's what makes it funny.
Yeah. I mean, this is a story structure that we've seen done 1,000 times. Oh, a party goes wrong. People die. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, but it's kind of cool. I mean, it's funny. It's very much taking the piss out of Gen Z and millennials, you know? I mean, there's a lot of dealing with gender and identity politics and making fun of, not necessarily making fun of those things, but making fun of how some people handle those things.
Making light of it?
Yeah, kind of making light of how people can exaggerate many of those things and kind of take it too far in a lot of situations. And so what happens is characters start dying. They're playing a game called Bodies, 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 which is, if you ever play the game Body, Body, basically hand out cards or a way to designate who a killer is, turn the lights out, and the person that is the killer goes and touches a, or illustrates to the other person that they are dead. Lights come back on. People are supposed to try to determine who the killer is. Well, in this circumstance, people actually die because I don't want to say anything about why, but you know, so they're trying to figure out who this, who the real killer is. And it's all happening while they're having a party during a freaking hurricane, which feels the most Gen Z slash millennial thing ever, because it feels like something that they
it is yeah. 100%. Yeah.
So they can't call for help and anything else. And they also need to find out who is killing their friends. And it is one of their friends that is killing them. So it's, and also Lee Pace is there as the boyfriend for one of them, but he's ridiculously older than them. If you don't know Lee Pace, he's been in a ton of content. Go look him up. But he's very Matthew McConaughey in the movie. Like, he's shirtless a lot. He's very cool. He's obviously too old to be hanging out with these kids, but he is just having the time of his life, and he is a lot of fun. Everybody in the cast is having a lot of fun. Maria Bakalova is basically the outsider because she's the girlfriend of Malin Stenberg, who is kind of a recovering addict, and her friends didn't even know she was going to show up at this party. And so Maria Bakalova is there. She's not really wanted there. And, you know, so she's very much an outsider. She's kind of our eyes into this collection of friends as people start dying. And she's starting to wonder, like, who the hell is really the killer here? And it goes bonkers. It's funny. It's bloody. It's entertaining. And it feels like it's something fresh. By the time you get to the end, it's like, oh, okay. Now I see who and what is going on here. And it's entertaining. It's just interesting and very, very, very funny. Very funny.
Awesome. What do you give Bodies, Bodies, Bodies for a score?
I give it $8. It's an A24 film too, so you will see it in theaters, I'm sure.
Heck yeah.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it.
All right. Any recent film or TV recommendations you all have been looking at this week, Amanda or John?
I started Paper Girls. I watched the first episode of Paper Girls on Amazon Prime. And it feels an awful lot like Amazon's trying to cash in on that Stranger Things vibe and not doing a really good job of it. So that's my not recommendation for you all.
Is that the involves time travel, if I understood correctly?
Yeah, it involves time travel, or at least it seems to involve time travel. I've got to re-pick it up at one of these points, but the first episode kind of like bored me enough that I need to put it down for a little bit and then wait till like a day where I'm drinking beer or something while I'm watching TV to give it another shot.
Well, I saw Gone in the Night is the first one that I saw recently in theaters. It has Winona Ryder. It came to South by Southwest earlier this year, and neither Aaron or I had an opportunity to check it out. And so I wanted to see if it was worth the hype or not. And it was interesting is what I'll say. I would encourage you to check it out. It is more of a drama. It's not a thriller, more of like a mystery of what's happening. But essentially what happens is Winona Ryder and her boyfriend go up to this cabin for like a special night. And when they show up, there is another couple who has already apparently booked the room. And so they decide to stay there because it's late at night and they drove all this way and some things happen from there. It's crazy. It did not go in the direction I thought it would. If you do go see it, I would encourage you to move past the first 15 to 20 minutes because it feels like in those 15 to 20 minutes, what the hell am I watching and why am I here? And this is so dumb, but it actually does get better.
What service movie? You said it was in the theaters currently?
It is in theaters. Yeah, I don't know when it's coming out for VOD, but it's worth checking out if it's in your theater. Otherwise, it'll come out for you to rent. The other one I saw was Where the Crawdads Sing. I know this one has gotten quite a bit of hype, and quite honestly, I don't know why. This girl, Kaya, raised herself in the dangerous marshlands of North Carolina, and she's kind of picked on, and everybody knows her as like the marsh girl. She was all alone and had to take care of herself, and she's brought into the world after she meets a guy. And then when someone is found dead, they seem to think that it's got to be the Marsh girl. You know, she had to have done this. And so it's kind of the mystery of, did she do it or did she not do it? However, they focus so much on the romance that I feel like the mystery was kind of the background story. And that's really what I cared about, is did she murder this person or not? That's what we care about. Give me the details.
I think this is one of those books that you transcend to the film. And it's depending on like the type of production company that would do this. So like if like an A24, for example, were to do this film, you'd probably get more focus on the murder mystery. But because it's coming from Reese and the Hello Sunshine crew, you're getting more of that, you know, poppy glam love story kind of focus to it.
Yeah. There were so many moments that I was like, I really wanted to just leave the theater.
Yeah, agree.
It was cheesy and it was, don't get me wrong, there are some really good moments to it and I can see why some people would like it. Daisy Edgar Jones is fantastic, but I'm sorry, Olivia Newman, this ain't it.
Yeah, did not live up to the expectation.
No, not at all.
Unfortunately. I've been inside mostly, some illnesses in the family, so trying to isolate. No COVID, thankfully, just some summer colds. So I went ahead and got AMC Plus for the 7-day trial and binged the crap out of The Walking Dead 11th season to get ready for obviously October for the final 6 episodes. I could tell you that if you're on the fence of Walking Dead or haven't caught up with season 11 yet, the first 6 episodes of season 11 focus on Pope and Shaw, and that 6 episodes was fantastic. The middle 6, which focuses on the Commonwealth, is like a snooze fest, and they had no idea how to string these episodes together. There's like a bunch of time jumps and you don't really get motivation of people. They just introduce characters out of the blue. It's very haphazardly put together. Not liking the middle 6 of season 11 at all. Which was sad, you know, because the end of season 10 was actually, even though they were standalone stories at the end of season 10, they were some of the best episodes, I thought, from a storytelling perspective of the characters and diving into the characters, that really made me excited to go into 11, and 11 kicks off in a really amazing way. But then once they jump into this, the Commonwealth, and they're all, you know, all happy-go-lucky again, it's just like, it's boring unless they're killing people.
You know, seeing how you just got AMC Plus, you should sit down and watch Kevin Can Go F Himself.
Oh, yeah.
That is a great show. And it stars one of our favorite people from Schitt's Creek, which is Andy Murphy. And if you have a chance to sit down and watch that show, Troy, I suggest you do it, because it is a great play on your usual sitcom versus drama. And it's a good time.
Is it like a shorter 22 or is it the longer 44 minute?
I think it's a shorter 22. I don't remember.
Okay. We'll definitely check it out. Well, again, if you got a recommendation, go ahead and throw it our way over in the Facebook group, or you could go ahead and join Patreon. That's right, because our show is independently funded. Therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps you all support us because we are your favorite people. We're here every week. So we sign up.
Well, not, most of us are.
Anyway, Amanda's working on it. Two out of four.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
So the more money you pay, the more times Amanda will show up on time. That's really how it works. So
yeah. Or at all sometimes.
Well, yeah. You know what's if you challenge Amanda to show up, suddenly she's driven to show up. So if you sit there and say, Amanda, there's no way you're going to ever show up on time, she's going to be like, yeah, let's throw down then. I'm going to show up on time.
That's really how I work, is I'm competitive and I like to prove people wrong.
There you go. So we're going to change the Patreon tiers to be like when you do like one of those, like how many pins you knock down at bowling or how many steps you walk or bike miles you bike. For every minute that Amanda shows up early, everybody has to chip in an extra buck.
Yeah.
However many times you can come up with a way to neg Amanda to do what she should be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And besides all of that Amanda time you're going to get, you'll also get immediate access to all of our content in the respective tier. We have bonus episodes every month. We also have Bad Movie Night, which you can hear John just completely rip on my childhood about Transformers in our recent episode. So now that you understand what Patreon is all about, head on over there, patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Are you still mad that you were looking up names of Transformers, still getting them wrong, and I was correcting you without having to look them up?
Me Grimlock. Me don't care.
I'm going to take that as a yes.
All right, let's go ahead and get into our From the Outside In topic. Let's talk franchise films. Variety ran a piece focused on Roku's audience insights, essentially looking at the trends of streaming customers, and it showed just how powerful franchise films can be, even on the streaming market. So like when a new blockbuster hits theaters, say Top Gun Maverick, activity for the previous films, like Top Gun, even though it's many, 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 many years old, they actually shoot way, way up. So like, for example, when The Batman came out, a 554% increase in Roku searches when it hit theaters on March 4th, and a 270% increase when it became available on the streaming service on April 18th. Now, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, which also did very well at the box office, brought in a 244% increase in Roku searches once it hit the theaters, and once it became available on streaming, it skyrocketed to over 1,200%. I mean, these are just astronomical things. Now, granted, these are search numbers, right? So you have to take that with a grain of salt. Just because you search for it doesn't mean you're actually going to convert and buy and download and all of that stuff. But when you have something like Top Gun Maverick and you have Jurassic World Dominion hitting the place, now these guys actually brought their entire franchises up into the forefront, because both Top Gun and all of the Jurassic Park films were among the top 20 search titles on Roku overall when those prospective movies came out in June. So, I mean, it's just fun when you think about all of this spin-off franchise type of thing. The question, John, is that when a new blockbuster comes out like this, are you searching for the content? Do you own the content? Is there anything that you do before you go see the new movie?
I have to say that, you know, it depends on the franchise, right? If it's something that I adore, it is something that I will sit down and rewatch. If it's Marvel, I don't have enough time in the day to sit there and be like, I'm going to watch all of Phase 1, 2, and 3 before I go watch this movie. It's not going to happen, folks. It depends. Like, I own a lot of them. Actually, I own everything Marvel. I own all the Godzilla movies. I own all the DC stuff. I own a lot of stuff that I love. But I made a rule a long time ago that unless it's something that I love, and I don't care if it's a franchise or not, I'm not owning every single bit of it. Will I sit down and watch it? Again, depends on the franchise.
I am the type that if it's a big watch for me, like it's Scream or it's Fast and the Furious, I have to watch all of the other movies before I go. At the very least, like if time doesn't permit for me, then I'm going to watch just the last movie before I go. But first of all, I have the most horrendous memory known to man for an almost 30-year-old, and it just does not work properly. And so I have to. If I want to go into this movie remembering what's supposed to happen and where things left off, then I have to do some rewatches.
Like the whole thing, though? Are you rewatching all of Marvel? Are you watching all of Star Wars?
So, like, if there's a new Marvel, like, for example, let's say that I don't like Thor enough, but if I really liked Thor, I would have rewatched the Thor movies. I have to, like, really connect with the property to do a full rewatch. Now, if there was, like, when Doctor Strange came out, I had rewatched WandaVision again. I love Scarlet Witch. I'm going to rewatch the whole series and then go into that movie because I knew Scarlet Witch was part of it. Fast and the Furious, I typically do try to rewatch all of them. Scream, I rewatch all of them because I like these franchises. If Harry Potter came out with a new movie connected to the original, I would rewatch all of those again. That sort of thing. But not for everything.
Yeah, for me, it's not so much that I don't want to rewatch things. It's the matter of I want to have a different experience when these things come out. So, for example, when The Matrix came out at Christmas, which I still think was actually an okay movie. It wasn't a great Matrix movie. I personally like the love story angle of it. But I wanted to have an experience with my kids. So we went ahead and rewatched the original three movies because it gets them the ability to be part of the zeitgeist and the conversation and the talking with their friends for the new movie that's coming out. If it's just me sitting down and going like, oh, okay, I'm going to go watch all the Fast and Furious movies before, you know, F10, 11 comes out down the line. I just don't have that kind of time. I might watch like 5 because I really enjoyed 5. It was probably one of the best ones. Or I go back and watch 1 just for the nostalgia factor, but I wouldn't watch the entire thing. I'm not going to watch the, you know, redo Game of Thrones for the House of the Dragon because the House of the Dragon takes place before Game of Thrones. So it seems like that's kind of a pointless effort there. Some people might be doing that. That's totally cool for you. Not going to do it here. Definitely not watching Indiana Jones 4 before I watch Indiana Jones 5. That is for damn sure. Might watch Indiana Jones 1 and 3, but that's just how it is. Do you, like John just talked about, Amanda, do you also purchase all of the franchise stuff that you love, or are you rather just happy to take your chance with streaming, or what are you doing there?
Absolutely not am I relying on streaming. We have realized, was it Apple? Which I can't remember which streaming service it was, but one of them, they did a migration and essentially you lost all of your content. And then I think Apple came out and said, like, hey, just so you know, you don't actually own this stuff. Like, this is not yours. So will I use, you know, even just the digital purchases? Nope. Not for a franchise I really care about. I need that, like, paper. I need that in my hands. It's like a good old book. It's like a good old book. I need that physically in my hands. I need to be able to count on that being there whenever I feel the urge to rewatch it. Because here's the thing for me, franchises are probably the types of movies I rewatch the most. Single films, I don't tend to rewatch a lot. It's when they have a full franchise, I'll want to do like a whole day or a weekend or whatever. So I need to make sure that I have access to all of them. And here's the other thing. When it comes to streaming, they can easily change and modify the content. And I want that OG movie. I want to always have that, because we've seen that even with Disney. They've modified some of the movies when they released on the streaming service. So they're no longer the same as they used to be. And I know that there's good intention sometimes, but I also feel like that's not how the movie was created. That's not what the filmmaker's intentions were. And I don't want to have a distorted version.
Sometimes it's the filmmaker that makes the distorted version. George Lucas, sorry.
Yes, yeah, right? Sometimes it is.
Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, when it comes to the stuff that I love, again, the stuff that I love, I am going to buy the physical media. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. Yeah, I will even at times purchase digital media if it's on sale for the stuff I love, just for the convenience factor of being able to reach it wherever I am. And when it comes to the digital media that I own, actually, like during Prime Day this last month, I actually bought a 10 terabyte drive to attach to my computer so that I can download all my digital media and have it stored on that 10 terabyte drive, because that's all I own at the moment. Can you do that? Oh, yeah. You can download all your media and store it on a drive, and they can't take that away from you.
You can't play it, though, either, because you don't have the DRM license on it, unless you strip the DRM, which you're not supposed to do.
You're not supposed to do that. But if they take it off their platform, but you own the digital media, you can still play it.
Well, I'm full of streaming because I don't even have a disk drive in my house. I mean, I guess I have one on my Xbox, but I'm not like going to go off my chair and go grab a disk and stick it in there and pray that it gets stuck or damaged or put in the wrong way and then have it ruined, when literally I can watch all of Star Trek on Paramount and I can watch all of Harry Potter on whichever service it's going to because it's leaving HBO. I can go ahead and watch pretty much any franchise I want on any streaming service I want. So I don't even have to own the things anymore because they're on the streaming services themselves directly. Even though there's some franchises that I do own the digital versions of, like The Matrix, like the Fast and the Furious series, the Bond. I did watch all of Bond over the most recent ones, just because I knew that it was all going to be, parts of it were going to be in that final movie. So those I own digitally, but I just don't think physical is necessary, because with things like Movies Anywhere, your license is basically backed up. So even if it changes services, you still have the license that you purchased through Movies Anywhere linking it all together. I've never run into a license problem. And now that I said that, I'm going to have an issue.
You are. I also want everyone to know that while Troy is sitting here rambling and talking about his response to this, John and I are typing in the format back to each other the stuff that we're probably going to end up saying. Like, we have some questions coming up that we're going to talk about, and I have my responses in the format that I'm typing as actively, which would piss Aaron off if he knew. And then John's sitting here saying, "This doesn't need a franchise," and yelling at me. And I love it. It's funny.
So what is the most fun thing you've ever done, John, for a franchise besides typing little love letters to Amanda in the background?
Well, you know, I mean, a player's going to play. Anyhow, the things that I think are fun that I've gotten ready for a franchise has to do more with the communal aspects of watching things with friends. So if I get really excited about something, so for example, Godzilla King of All Monsters, I got a group of friends together to go see that in the theater. I introduced them all to Godzilla in our chat, planning the night. We created a chat in which I was Godzilla, of course. You know, we nicknamed everybody. So I was Godzilla. My wife was Mothra. Somebody else was Space Godzilla, you know, or Destroyer, and all these other Godzilla monster names. And that's what we saw in the chat. And we had a really good time with me introducing all these people that I love to Godzilla, which I love. So I think that comes down to the most fun thing that I was excited for.
The most thing I've ever done is, it's really hard to choose, but honestly, I'm going to have to say, and we've talked about this before on the show, former Hollywood Outsider host Scott Clark and I, we started with a friend, Alicia, and it grew into a lot of people just coming over to Scott's basement, where we would, on Black Friday, select a franchise. Sometimes we dress up like we did for Harry Potter one year. That was probably the best year we've had. But sometimes it's really hard, because then we did Fast and the Furious and I got to shave Scott's head. And we all took a bunch of shots and drank Corona every time we heard family. So, you know, when you have moments like that, it's the best. And that's kind of, we try to time it right, so that way when we do have these rewatches all in a single day, it's a franchise that has an upcoming movie. So without COVID, we were trying to do James Bond, which would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. See, that's, again, that's of the very communal aspect of,
it is.
Of sitting down and watching movies. And that's, as much as franchises are something that drive me a little nuts, because, you know, it makes very little room for other kinds of stories. The good side of it is that you can turn it into a communal or a neighborhood thing, where everyone's coming together over one storyline that everyone loves, or they're being educated on something in the sense of Godzilla. You know, that's what makes that really cool.
Yeah, we did have a few people over to watch Star Wars Episode 3 just before Obi-Wan started over on Disney Plus, and then we watched the premiere of Obi-Wan right after, which I thought was pretty great. But again, like John's saying, it's a communal aspect, right? When Jurassic came out, they had like the first two movies were playing. So you got like all three in one day. And we went and did that at the movie theater. That was a lot of fun. Or even like Lord of the Rings, when Lord of the Rings came out with its 4K release, they replayed Lord of the Rings in the in IMAX over three weekends. And we went to the theater and made sure, again, that was with my kids. I took my son to go see Lord of the Rings for the first time for him. And get ready for what will be the, you know, upcoming series on Amazon Prime. That's going to be awesome. Can't wait. September 2nd on Prime. I get paid every time I say it. What's the most bummed you've been, you know, when you heard Han was coming back from the dead?
Well, the most bummed I've been that a film didn't become a franchise is definitely Serenity. We all have had high hopes that the show would return, that we would have gotten more movies. Although Serenity was amazing, I really wish we would have gotten more of that content at that time. A couple other, and this is where John and I were arguing with each other in our format, is Constantine, I think, would have been a really fun one to get more of. Anything
I think
with
we
Keanu
are
Reeves.
Getting more of that one.
Yes. But like at that time, if we could have had it, that would have been great. But
yeah.
Nice Guys, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Neither one of those need to be franchises, were designed to be franchises, or nowhere in the neighborhood of being a franchise needed. They were perfectly good, great one and done stories.
They are. They are. I'm just saying I would love more out of that world.
Okay, great. Then technically, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a sequel to Nice Guys.
I appreciate the way you think.
Even though Kiss Kiss Bang Bang came out first.
It did, a long time before.
Right, but you know, it's the same it's the same creative company behind both of those movies. So there you go. The one that I think about the most when I think about this is John Carter. And it's funny. Yeah, it's funny because like I didn't bother going to see the movie in the theater. I didn't really like as much as I love the artwork for John Carter of Mars or the Princess of Mars or whatever it is you call that story. As much as I love all the artwork from that and the artists who have done artwork for it, I didn't really care. And then one day I got bored and I put it up on my TV and that's a really good movie. And it's the first time Taylor Kitsch has done something that was worth sitting down and watching, at least for me up until that point. So yeah, John Carter, like I really wish we can spend more time in that world. Edgar Rice Burroughs, who's written stories for Tarzan and a whole lot of other things way back in the day, also wrote this Princess of Mars storyline, which is something completely different. And it's like every single bit of it was something that's worth paying attention to. And it has so much of a rich history to it, just as much as Tarzan. So you can really make a whole series out of it.
I mean, I'm going to be the one that's going to say something that's probably controversial, but I really think Tenet could be turned into a franchise. I think there's a lot of interesting stories there and people that, you know, how the technology works. And knowing how it all ended, like there's different factions you could explore and things you could do. So that could literally become like a Bond type scenario. Not that it would be Bond, but like you could have different villains and keep that concept going, I think, on a regular basis.
I think you're right. But at the same time, I think that movie only works once. And because of like the whole aspect of how the time travel is working, and the whole aspect of the story that's being told, there's no way to tell that story a different way that would be nearly as engaging or fun. Although I would love to see John David Washington in more things. So whether it is another Tenet or whether it's another leading role, I think it would be great for all of us to see that kind of growth out of that actor.
Another one I think could be The Rocketeer as well. Rocketeer could have been a lot of fun.
That's one that I just don't have interest in. I know that's just a me thing, but...
No, it's not just a you thing. I've tried to watch The Rocketeer several times, and even when it first came out, it just didn't connect with me for some reason. Maybe it's the time period, or maybe it's like that was the hokier time of Disney, or to me at least. But I can understand why people want to see that, because it has that whole, it's got kind of like a steampunky feel to it. And people really love that as far as, a feels go.
Yeah. Cause it was like part Flash Gordon, part Indiana Jones, gave you a little Captain America feel because of that time period.
Yeah, very much so. And again, like you've got a character who's just an everyman who just happens to get himself a fancy rocket back thing, and his buddy and him make a helmet that looks like a hood ornament, and it works. It all actually works. And yeah, it could totally be like an Indiana Jones story in a sequel, or more of a Buck Rogers story in a sequel. Yeah, you can definitely do that sort of thing.
Okay, what about franchises where you go overboard? Things are like, oh my gosh, Game of Thrones, new season, rewatching the whole thing. Like, where have you gone absolutely bonkers to get re-caught up on a particular franchise, Amanda?
Well, you mentioned it for one of them, Game of Thrones. There's a group of us in town. Aaron is actually leading the charge for a little watch, a rewatch, and preparation for the new series that's coming out. But my number one would probably have to be Harry Potter. I mean, more than anything, it's Harry Potter. It's when I went to Universal and walked into the Wizarding World, I literally cried. Like, that's how connected I am to that franchise. And so anything to do with Harry Potter, I'm obsessed and in love with. It's just, I can't ever take that away. The other one I would say is Scream. It's my favorite horror movie. The first one is. I freaking love that franchise no matter what. I really love it. I'm very sad that Neve Campbell is not going to be in the new movie that's coming out because they didn't want to give her enough money. Sad, sad, sad. Women still not doing that. But those are probably the two where I'm just a little too obsessed with.
But she did make a badass PSA for blood donation.
Absolutely.
Which is cool.
You know, back when, you know, I was a wee lad in my 20s-ish, I would say that I would go overboard for Star Wars, and I'd lost my mind for the Star Wars movies. And we would pop those VHSs or DVDs into the player, depending on whatever it was we had, and we would watch the crap out of those as friends. And then the prequels happen, and I don't do that anymore. I don't. You know, now my rewatching of franchises is all about what kind of mood I'm in. Oh God, it's a hard day. Let me put some Marvel stuff on and not really pay attention to it and feel okay about it. Well, you know what? I'm feeling kind of wistful. Let me put some Godzilla on and I'm going to pay attention to bits and pieces of it. I might be on my phone a bit, but it's going to make me feel good and connected to my past. You know, I no longer do the thing where I'm like, I have to watch and rewatch everything to do this. I Game of Thrones. I know people who rewatch every season of Game of Thrones before the next season of Game of Thrones came out. And to those people, I have to say they make something for that. It's called drugs.
The cool thing about rewatching Game of Thrones, which, by the way, I'm that person. I'm doing a rewatch right now in preparation for the new show. But the thing about it is you always see something new. You always get to see something new that you didn't catch before. And that is something that I really love and admire about Game of Thrones.
Is there really that much new? I mean,
just things that you didn't catch before. Like, you see something that you hadn't seen before.
That fundamentally changes the story and...
Like when they lopped Ned Stark's head off, and you know how I just thought it just lopped it off and it fell to the ground. But you know, there's a little bit of a spin to it. They put a little bit of English on that spin, and it's such a great little detail.
No, it's about all of the callbacks to things that are going to happen in the future that once you've rewatched, once you've seen the entire series, you can go back and say, oh, I didn't catch this before. It was ultimately leading to this point. You know, this connected to that at the end.
That's what you call, you know, good writing. You're not supposed to see it.
It is good writing.
You're not supposed to see it until you go back and watch it again and go, oh yeah, you know, like this other show that we do a podcast for.
Or not even like go back and watch it. It's good writing is that moment where you're like, oh my God, in episode 32, they brought this up. And here I am at episode 85, and I'm just now seeing it happen in front of me. This is amazing. Like, that's good writing.
Because you can remember it. Because if you're a true fan, you don't have to rewatch it. You just know.
That's right. You just know. You lived in the world. You have a mental set of notes in your head that take up too much space.
Maybe because you already watched it three times before, so you don't have to rewatch it again. Because really, you've done three rewatches. You just did it all at the same time.
Right.
I don't know if I have one in particular. I mean, I am a Lord of the Rings guru. I love it. Up, down, sideways, cry every time I watch Return of the King. So, I mean, Pansy. That one's probably, you know, sometimes I'll watch their theatrical, sometimes I'll watch the extended, sometimes I'll just put it on to go to sleep because I love the music. Everything about Lord of the Rings is great. Hobbit, I will never play again in my lifetime.
Never say never, Troy.
Star Wars, I have to say that I am working on a very slow rewatch of some of the Clone Wars series, as well as Rebels, in preparation for the Ahsoka show when it comes, because I really enjoyed the Ahsoka character. I think it's going to be fantastic. I think all of you should share your thoughts on this episode or anything else about John, Amanda, myself, or how much you really, really just love Aaron not being on the show. You can do that over in the Facebook group or on Twitter at Buy Popcorn.
Poor Aaron.
Hey, don't do that, because as soon as like a bunch of people were like, hey, we don't need Aaron to be on the show anymore, he's going to be like, peace, I'm out.
Yeah, please don't do that. Please, we need him.
It really won't take a lot, and I don't like prepping for this show.
That's right. We need Aaron at least to generate the ideas and the outline.
That's right.
At a minimum. So yeah, go ahead and tell Aaron how much you love him over on Twitter at Buy Popcorn.
Yes.
Or on our website.
Tell him how much you missed him.
At thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Kiss his ass.
You could email him at Aaron at The Hollywood Outsider, or the rest of us at feedback at The Hollywood Outsider if you have thoughts on this week's show. Rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app, whether that's iTunes, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcast. We are everywhere that you want us to be. You can find Aaron when he's around on Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks on the Twitters. John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws. Amanda on Smirk, as well as at Sink Into This on Twitter. And me, I'm at Troy Heinrichs. And you can hear Aaron and I chit-chat on The Blacklist Exposed and on Beyond Westworld, which has 2 episodes left for season 4. And season 4 has been outstanding. You can get that podcast right here on the Hollywood Outsider Network. And with that, we will say toodaloo for now. Thanks so much for being here, Amanda.
Toodaloo.
Bye.
Why did you point me out? You said thanks for being here, Amanda, not to John, too. That's your way of saying thanks for showing up this time.
You took it that way. I was just giving you props to say goodbye first. I mean, how you want to read into things is a you problem. maybe you should put out a public apology about it to me later, and then I can just ignore it.
I should. I should not tell you personally. I should just put it online.
Exactly.
I'll make a YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Bye, John. Mm-hmm. We'll miss you too.
Bye, buddy. It was a good time.
It was a good time. All right. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, everyone, buy popcorn and watch popcorn. How to Do It on our TikTok channel.
Yeah, we got TikTok and we made a video. Pro tips. Check it out.
Drench it in butter.
Maybe not drench it, but you definitely want to smother and cover.
That's what she said.
Maybe we have to have Scott Clark make his buttered popcorn recipe.
He uses the straw method.
Yes.
He does.
Yes, I know. But he needs to like do a TikTok for the show for that.
He should.